This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After President Barack Obama nominated Judge Sonia Sotomayor for the Supreme Court, comments about her character were only to be expected, but several public figures used the term racist. Last week, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich posted a message on Twitter, "Imagine a judicial nominee said, 'My experience as a white man makes me better than a Latina woman. New racism is no better than old racism. White man racist nominee would be forced to withdraw. Latino woman racist should also withdraw.'" Speaker Gingrich later reconsidered his use of the term, but others have not. And once the word is out there, it's hard to erase. Whatever your view on Judge Sotomayor, labeling someone a racist changes the conversation. It's incendiary, even when it's accurate, and when it's not, it's terribly unfair. It can hurt professionally and socially. So when is it okay to call someone a racist? Later in the hour, Tom Vanderbilt, the author of Traffic, joins us to talk about construction delays. Get ready this summer. But first, have you been called a racist? Have you called someone else a racist? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. And we begin with Rick Moran, an editor and blogger at AmericanThinker.com and PajamasMedia.com. He joins us from his home in Streator, Illinois. And nice to have you with us today.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And you also blog for RightWingNuthouse.com, and people have called you a racist.
Yes, they have. Probably just because of the name of the blog. I've been called racist by commenters on the blog and commenters on other blogs, other bloggers. You're absolutely right. It's something that sticks to you like glue. It's very, very difficult to respond to, especially when it's used in the context that it was used when applied to me.
In what context was that?
Well, I think, you know, I've been thinking a little bit about this. I think we have to take two different contexts here for racism. There is the genuine article. There are the David Dukes of the world who, you know, deserve to be called racist. But then there is the political context where racist, as Newt Gingrich, as many, many people did during the presidential campaign, use the term to cut off debate or, you know, worse, to basically delegitimize the argument of your opponent.
So it's a way of saying, I'm right, you're wrong.
That's exactly right. And you know, there's just no way to respond to it. If you respond to it, you acknowledge the legitimacy of it.
Is it the same as calling someone a fascist? I mean, obviously, the two things are different, but in terms of its effect.
No, because there are easy responses to that. I mean, that's a simple-minded ad hominem type attack that is easily brushed off, just demonstrably by, you know, your writings or something that you've said. No, racist is an emotional term.
And is it a term that gains? Is there a snowball effect once one person has called you a racist? You're in the public eye. Does it gain steam as more people do it?
Well, I think if you have a certain amount of notoriety, yes. But for somebody like me, who's just a little blogger and online editor and writer, no. But the fact is that during the campaign, it was the word was bandied about indiscriminately.
And as I know you've written about this, as this issue has become particular to you, as you've looked at it, do you think it's particular to either right-wing or left-wing?
I would say that perhaps depends on the situation, but certainly during the campaign, it was all coming from the Democrats and the left, that's for sure.
And more recently in the Sotomayor case, from the right.
I think it does depend somewhat on the context. And Newt Gingrich apologized, for saying that. But others have not, as you mentioned. And the reason is that, it is a powerful argument that that conservatives have tried to make over the years. And that is that racism, as it is currently defined, is not fair. I mean, the idea that that you can look into a man's soul or talk about his subconscious, his cultural touchstones being racist is, conservatives kind of look at that as nonsense.
Well, we wish you luck, Rick.
All righty.
Thank you. Rick Moran, a blogger and editor at AmericanThinker.com and PajamasMedia.com, joining us from his home in Streeter, Illinois. And joining us now is Dawn Turner Trice, who writes the Exploring Race column for the Chicago Tribune and joins us. We turn to her on this subject, as we often do on this program. Today, she's with us from a studio at Chicago Public Radio. Always nice to have you with us on the program.
Hello, Neil. Thank you.
And I wonder if Rick Moran, do you think is right? Is this a conversation stopper? Is this a meant to cap a debate?
I think he's absolutely right, because to be defined as a racist, and you have to think about what it is what images are conjured when we define someone as a racist. We think about the men who killed Emmett Till. You know, we think about the KKK and people involved in lynchings in the South, and so you have these really stark and harsh images, and to try to and that word is so freighted, and to have to work to get from under it is just an extremely difficult thing to do.
And do you think he's right that the other, weighted and words, jackboots, Nazi, fascist, do not carry the weight of racist?
Not in this country. Because of our history, the word is particularly harsh, and it there's so much baggage that's connected with it. So that when you are labeled, a person who is labeled a racist, there are so many almost contortions that person has to do to kind of get from under it.
An interesting email we have from Barb in Duluth, Minnesota. I was taught by my sociology professor the only way a person can be racist is by being in a position of power over someone else, for example, police, judges, bosses. The premise was you had to have power first in order to be racist.
I understand that, and I hear that a lot from my readers. I do believe that power is a very important aspect of the whole that racist the name. We all are prejudiced. We have our prejudices, it used to be said that only white people could be racist because white people had the power. Well, that's not the case. It was never the case that all white people had a lot of power, and now. Increasingly, we have people of color who are in positions of power. And could they be racist in that regard? I think absolutely.
There is also the reaction that people accused of racism, and in this case, the first one example that sprang to mind was Jesse Jackson when he was named as using a terrible expression about Jews. And his first reaction was, wait a minute, that was off the record.
Well, as if there a distinction can be made between, some of the things that we say publicly or our public persona and maybe some of the things that we may feel or say privately. And that's not, especially if you are a public person, I mean, that's not a defense.
Obviously not a defense, but it is so freighted that the first year reaction of almost anybody is to be very defensive.
Absolutely. Well, because of our history with it, and that is, and as was said a few minutes ago, you have to come out swinging with this. There isn't something because to kind of sit, you're in a position where if you do come out swinging, then you are it's a tough place to be. If you say nothing, then you cower to it, and it's a very difficult position to be put in.
We're asking our listeners today, when is it okay to call someone a racist? Have you been called that word? Have you used that word in relation to somebody else? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Michael is on the line from Wilmington in Delaware.
No, Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, excuse me.
Right. It's a little different.
Yes, it is.
It's in the South.
And way in the South, indeed.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of the old school way of thinking here, but I had been called, not necessarily the contents of it just being in the South, but from relationships and people that because of not being attracted to a certain group, whether it be African-American, physically I'm talking about, or say Chinese, or, a physical attraction, and say, oh, you're a racist, and that automatically brings up, a defensive thing where you want to defend yourself and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not right, I'm not racist, that's kind of, I think anyway involves like a hatred and a something a lot deeper than just physical attraction, whether it be somebody that's blonde or that sort of thing.
And how did you respond to it, Michael?
Just that way, saying, no, I know in my heart that I'm not, because that hate isn't there for, you know, an ignorant reason of just, and because of friendships that have long been established and, you know, my growing up in different relationships. So knowing yourself helps to overcome that, where in the end you just have to know really in your heart what you feel and know about yourself, and then people can make comments, but it still, it hurts, and it brings out that, just like the other caller said, everybody's got some prejudice, whatever way you want to swing it, but to be called a racist brings out that, you know, wait a minute, no, I'm not.
And was there a moment of self-reflection? Did you, after the defensive reaction, did you sit by yourself quietly and say, wait a minute, let me think about this for a minute?
Well, yeah, I mean, all through life, I think you have those reflective moments, not just then. So that was definitely there, and that's always there, hopefully, anyway, that you reflect about things that you do. Not too much and obsess about it, but yeah, I was reflective and think, is that right? You know, you ask yourself, am I? And then you're like, no, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I know who I am, and I know what's in my heart. And so that's not me, but you can't, you know, make someone else see that.
Don Turner Trice, self-knowledge, helpful in many circumstances, but certainly in this one, too.
Absolutely. And Michael, I was wondering, when you said not being attracted, I was wondering in terms of relationships, when you said
Yeah, sexually, physically, and not just sexually, I guess, with relationships in general. And, yeah, of course.
Right. Well, I think that we all have our right to choices and things that we see and believe, you know, things that we kind of, you know, we're attracted to. But I think that a racist should be defined by an accumulation of things and not just a handful of surface, you know, sound bites or excerpts. It should come from us kind of looking closely, whether it's within or without, at a person and then kind of looking at a number of things and not just one or two that's presented.
Yeah, it's like this, the whole issue that we're dealing with now, it's just like a comment thrown out there, like to use it for attack, you're a racist, and use it so quickly or lightly, and when no, like you have to look at so many things.
Michael, thanks very much for the call, and I apologize for misidentifying your state. We're talking about when is it okay to call someone a racist. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Most of us know someone who's been accused of being a racist, maybe fairly, maybe not. We're talking today about when it's okay to label someone racist and what happens when you do. Have you been called a racist? Have you used that word to describe someone else? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guest is Dawn Turner Trice, who writes the Exploring Race column for the Chicago Tribune. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Andrew. Andrew calling from Cleveland.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Growing up, my dad was raised in a very conservative, ignorant upbringing in the South. So that was part of his makeup. And going through high school, when I learned what racism was, I remember a conversation with my mother where I said to her, and just between the two of us, I said, well, Dad's racist. And she very quickly admonished me and said, no, he's not. He's a bigot.
And did you understand what she was trying to get at?
I kind of got the idea right away. She didn't really explain herself much, but I really got the idea that, okay, this is not a light title to apply to somebody. But I'm curious as to what Ms. Turner Trice would consider the differentiation between the two, if there is any.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm reminded when President Obama had said that his white grandmother once said some things that he found profoundly offensive. But the question, was she a racist? Can you call a person who takes in her brown grandchild and loves him and rears him a racist? And one might say that, and this kind of pertains to your father, maybe that person says some things that are racist or insensitive. And maybe his prejudices come out in those statements. But as in terms of is that person in totality, is that person a racist? I think maybe that's what your mother was getting at. Does it logically follow that the person is a racist because he says he or she say bigoted things? And I think that maybe that's part of the whole looking at the whole person and the entire situation as opposed to kind of cherry picking parts.
Andrew, did you ever? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, because I think that we all, you know, we all, or most of us, have said things that maybe said things in inelegant ways and things that we may regret later. And there's also the possibility of change, right? So you could feel one way at one point in your life, and you can start to evolve into a different person.
Andrew, did you ever talk with your father about it?
Not so much. My father was a stroke victim, so it was, you know, sometimes you weren't sure what channel you were on.
Yeah, I understand.
As I grew older, I realized that, you know, it was less of the stroke and more of his upbringing. But it also, I figured that, you know, if you had to be truly racist, then my definition of it became, then you pursue your beliefs actively and try to put it on others. And he never did that. I mean, it was always just kind of his own personal views.
Andrew, thanks very much for the call.
And I think that that's a really important point, that it's how much does a person really act out, and that maybe the power portion comes into this. How much does that person's beliefs really affect his or her actions and in terms of affecting other people?
Here's an email that goes at least a bit to that point from Amy in California. I hate to admit it, but when Proposition 8 passed in California, I was so shocked and outraged I put up a yard sign, "Get out the torches and pitchforks, 8 passed, maybe we could throw a party with the KKK. I then left for work and couldn't remove it after my temper cooled. My neighbor and good friend took it as calling her a racist for voting yes on 8. I felt terrible, and it took a while for us to become good friends again. It reminds me of the angry email that you can never take back. Be careful of what you say." Of course, Proposition 8 was the gay marriage ban that passed in California, and many African Americans voted against, including Amy's neighbor. And there is the word used. There is something that, to identify with the KKK can be certainly interpreted as being racist.
Absolutely. I mean, we have these code words that that you may not use the R word, as you said, but I mean, there are other words that really dovetail into that whole sentiment. And again, it's very difficult, you know. I mean, it's hard to kind of undo it or unsay it. And so that whole sign on the yard, it does. It's kind of a scar. And we have to, we work very hard to kind of not fall into those situations.
Let's go to Tim, and Tim with us from Ellsbury in Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, I've been called a racist because I would not vote for Obama and President Obama. And personally, you know, I took offense to that because I didn't care if they were pink or purple or white or red or yellow, black or white. I think we all came from Noah. We have the same Ten Commandments, and mine was purely issues. And, you know, I see that a lot of times, though, in situations like that.
And was this said in anger or in calculation, do you think?
I think, you know, in just discussion. No, I don't think I really had any. A lot of people know me, and I don't think there was any anger. I think that I just had to clarify where I came from, and they understood, you know, well, I'm looking at it from a whole different perspective. So.
Yeah, amid the passions of a political campaign, Dawn Turner Trice, we did hear that comment, and they had to make arguments that, of course, you could be voting for John McCain or somebody else for that matter, and not for Barack Obama, and you know, there were plenty of reasons to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the label it's such an easy comeback, you know, and because in addition to it just being freighted, I mean, we all kind of know, we know what it means. And so instead of delving and asking people, you know, well, what else about the candidate? I mean, are you voting issues? A lot of times that did not happen for people who so easily threw the word out and just assume that because a white person did not vote for Obama, then that person was not doing so purely on racial grounds. And that's totally not fair.
There was some opposite to that where people, you know, I think people did vote for him just because he was black. I do think that happened.
But I think that the situation was so dire by November that there were people who were voting. I mean, those people were fewer. I mean, there were people who were voting on the issues, and it just so happened that Obama was the candidate of choice.
Do you think any Democratic candidate would have gotten 93% of the black vote, Dawn Turner Trice?
I think that traditionally any Democratic candidates have gotten 89, 90% of the black vote. So 3 percentage points extra. Maybe those were the people who voted purely along racial lines. I mean,
that's not the case.
Yeah. Of course, and there were people who, I mean, in exit polls stated quite specifically that they would not vote for Obama because of his race.
Yes.
So it did play on both sides.
Well, it all. Tim, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go next to, this is Anton. Anton with us from Cleveland.
Hello, Neil. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you.
You know, I was listening to this. You know, I want to say, you know, when I was younger, and if a white person said something against me or didn't hire me for a job, I would automatically say that this person, they're racist. But I think when you grow as a human being and as a person, I look back and say, well, maybe I wasn't qualified for that job. You know, mm-hmm. And I think when you place a moniker on a person such as they're racist, you know, stuff like that, you have to be very careful because, you know, I'm looking from a black male perspective that maybe they're not just racist. Maybe it's just us, and sometimes black people, we oversensitive to certain issues and certain things about us. And we have to be careful how we say that, because that's a real mean thing to say that a person is hateful, is a racist. And, you know, and as I got older and I'm grown up, you know, and I've come from America, I just want to say that all white people are not like that, and I have been called racist because of my views. But I've grown now to understand that that's not always true about people.
It's interesting you raise that point, Anton. There's an email that we have right on that point from Jennifer in Charlotte, North Carolina. As a white teacher in a majority-minority school, I've been accused of being a racist at least once a semester, always by African-American students. My Hispanic, Asian, and mixed students have never called me a racist. I'm always offended, and it is hard for me to respond without anger. I simply look the person in the eye and try to think about their experiences and ask, if I were, why would I teach in this school? After listening to how my students talk about each other and other adults, I believe anyone can be guilty of racism, and that racism, of course, is taught in the home. But Dawn Turner Trice, young people especially can react without thinking quite so much.
Absolutely, and I think that it's our responsibility and I'm speaking as a parent that we have to be able to we have to teach this. I have older relatives and who have said some things in the presence of my daughter, and I've had to confront that because it's not fair. And we leave this trail of whether it's language or misperceptions, and kids, you know, pick up on that. And I totally agree with the teacher. It does say something that she is teaching in a predominantly black school or school district, and that she cares about these kids. And when I think about that story, I'm reminded of what happened to Judge Charles Pickering, whom President Bush nominated to the U.S. Court of Appeals in 2001. The case in which the Senate Democrats filibustered the nomination, and then a contingent worked hard to label him a racist. It turned out that if you look beyond the surface accounts into the deeper, beyond the quotes that were bandied about at the time, that in the 1960s, Pickering had fought the KKK and put his family and himself in danger. And in 1981, he had defended a young black man charged of robbing a young white girl at knife point. And I mean, that didn't make him popular in Mississippi. He had also, and this for me was the most telling thing, he had chosen in the 1970s to keep his children in public school while Mississippi parents were resisting integration and taking their kids out. And so, you know, we can espouse all sorts of noble philosophies when it comes to race, but there's nothing like getting our children involved. And here the proof is in the pudding, right? And so that's what Judge Pickering did. And this is, I think, that you have to look at the entire picture rather than the cherry-picked parts before you start throwing out the label of racist. And unfortunately, young kids aren't, you know, they aren't always able to do that. But clearly, we as adults aren't always able to do that as well.
Yeah. Anton, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye. And I wonder, you wrote about the Sotomayor situation. Again, a couple of incendiary-sounding quotes that are being, it's hard to avoid them. Nevertheless, I wonder what kind of reaction you got from people who wrote to you.
The a lot of people want to replace the word when she said, "I hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life." And so a lot of my readers said, you know, well, what about replacing those words with white man and how resoundingly racist that would sound? And I have no quibble with that, right? It is a racist statement because, I mean, that sentence makes her sound as though she's painting with one broad brush. But beyond that sentence, and this is within the same speech, she says that there is no one Latina experience and no one group speaks with one voice. And so she allows that not all Latinas will come to the same conclusion and not all white guys are the same. So the sentence is troubling, as Obama and others have said, but does that make her a racist? And that's the point that I tried to make with readers. It is a troubling statement, but does that one statement make her a racist? And I don't believe that that's the case.
Dawn Turner Trice writes the Exploring Race column for the Chicago Tribune. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Suzanne on the line. Suzanne with us from Louisville.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm a school teacher, have been so for more than 30 years, so I've seen all kinds of situations with disgruntled parents, et cetera. I choose to teach in a school with more than 26 languages spoken. Less than 2 years ago, a parent accused me of being a racist, and I was informed of this. This is a former principal in front of the parent, and I was just absolutely so stunned. I totally relate to the speakers talking about if you don't talk, it's a no-win situation. I was just flabbergasted, and all I could come up with in the spur of the moment was I said my three grown children have dated people of other races, and that when I was in college in East Tennessee, I marched briefly but several times in civil rights movement. That's all I could come up with, which didn't satisfy the situation.
Yeah, you're left in the some of my best friends are response, which is it always sounds pretty thin.
Exactly. It's a no-win situation. It went to investigation. There was no evidence. Even my ex-husband was so incensed by this. He said, "I know you, and this is not you." He was, but no matter how innocent you feel, the more you protest, the more you look guilty.
And I assume there was also, we were talking earlier with one of our callers, some self-reflection involved after the emotions of the moment passed, that you thought about whatever it was that had caused this to come up and wondered, well, am I?
Yes, there was. And I think all of us have to see we're a product of our background. I actually had a very prejudiced father, prejudiced against anybody who was not white Anglo-Saxon male. And so, in a way, I worked very hard to come away from that, but it did cause a lot of reflection. And I was supported by the faculty. I was supported by my friends and family. But in all my years of teaching, it was one of the most discomforting things I've ever gone through.
I can understand. Suzanne, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. And we just have a minute or so left, Dawn, and I wanted to ask you, is one of the lessons we should derive from this is that we might want to ask community leaders, public officials, elected officials, to use the word cautiously?
Well, I do think, I don't know that I'm amazed that we have to ask that, because we all know what that word means and what it does to a person who's being accused of being a racist. But the previous caller said that her situation is a no-win, she thought it was a no-win situation. And I'm not certain that it is completely no-win, but I do think that it takes us just the continual education of really sitting down and talking about these things and working them out, whether it's a school district or the principal, teacher, in that particular situation, and the student, because we can say some things that may make us look as though we're racist, but we may have a background that is not consistent with that. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that we have to work harder. We cannot just allow the surface sound bites or excerpts to define who we are and who and anybody for that matter.
Dawn Turner Trice, a regular guest on this program. She writes the Exploring Race column for the Chicago Tribune with us today from Chicago Public Radio. As always, thanks very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, get ready for the summer of road construction. Tom Vanderbilt, the author of Traffic, on the best way to avoid construction delays. And if you've got any thoughts on that issue, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. When you see the orange cones, how do you react? Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.